everyone. My name is Lucas Widener, and welcome back to the This Week in Science podcast. Now, before we get started with the episode, before we proceed, I have a few things I want to quickly state and get out of the way. First of all, I'm suffering from a pretty miserable combination of a severe cold and summer allergies. So if I sound congested, or if I sound different, I guess, or if I cough or sniff a little bit, that is because of that nasty combination. And I hope I get better soon so I can resume normal podcasting. But I just want to let you know in case I do sound different or in case that kind of detracts from the episode. It is because of my cough, my cold, and my allergies. The second thing I want to state is that there's some pretty loud, and by loud I mean extremely loud, construction going right outside of my home. Like, I'm in the room right next to it, so I'm probably, not even 20 feet away from where it's happening. So there might be some loud bangs or thuds, or you might hear some construction-esque noises in the background. I wish I could change that, but they'll be here for about all day, and I just really wanted to get this podcast out. So I do apologize if you do hear those construction noises as well. So anyway, you're probably wondering what this podcast episode is, because normally I upload on a Friday, and you're probably noticing that this podcast episode is pretty long. And the reason for that is because this is a new sub-series. I'm not going to start a whole new podcast for this, but this is going to be a sub-series within the This Week in Science series, and I'll kind of try to explain what I mean by that. So each Friday, as you know, I upload a This Week in Science video, or podcast, excuse me, where I basically summarize that week's news and breakthroughs in tech and science. And I try to keep that to about 10 to 20 minutes. And I really try to keep my opinion out of it as much as I can. Maybe I'll occasionally tell my opinion, but really I don't want to pollute, I guess you could say. I don't want to pollute or mix my opinion with the facts, because the whole point of this podcast, you know, is to give you the facts so you can make your own opinions about tech and science. So I don't want to really meddle my opinion in there too much. You know, I don't want to really mix it in. Like I said, I'll occasionally state my opinion, but I try to keep it out as much as I can. But I like sharing my opinion. I find it refreshing, and I love sharing my view, and I love having other people, you know, kind of tell me more facts so I can keep evolving my view and opinion. So this is where this new sub-series comes into play. Now, this is going to be a 30 to 40 minute podcast episode. Which is different than my normal 10 to 20 minutes that I do for This Week in Science. And this is going to be bi-weekly, so every other week I will post this. And this is called This Week in Science In-Depth. And it's where I share my opinions about the last 2 weeks of technology and science. So I'm going to, you know, tell my opinions on all the articles I talked about over the past 2 weeks, or about the scientific happenings or breakthroughs. That is what this podcast is about. So I hope you'll enjoy. And without further ado, let's get started with This Week in Science In-Depth, the inaugural episode. So, 2 weeks back, we were talking about Apple's WWDC. We were talking about the Tesla energy storage projects, a new particle that shouldn't exist, sterile neutrino, how we had located a neutron star 200,000 light years from Earth, talking about Curiosity's discovery of things that could potentially lead to the conclusion of life on Mars, and bees understand the concept of zero, and a few other little things. So let's first talk about WWDC. What were my opinions on that? Well, I really wish we would have saw some actual hardware releases. Now, WWDC is the Worldwide Developers Conference, so obviously it's aimed towards software, of course, but still, I'm someone who loves hardware. More than software. And also, Apple has occasionally announced hardware at their WWDC keynote, so it's not like it hadn't happened before. So we all kind of held out our hopes for that, like iPhone SE 2, some people were saying, iPad Pro, or the new like bezel-less version, etc. But that didn't happen at all, which is okay. But we did get iOS 12. Some people said iOS 12 was underwhelming, but I strongly disagree with that statement. Now I wish there would have been a few more features, but this is mainly focused on fixing Apple's blunders and, you know, the mess that was and is iOS 11. It's it's gotten a lot better, but it's still kind of a mess right now. So iOS 12 should fix it. It should optimize performance. We get notification management, which sounds awesome, by the way. New Animojis and Memojis. I don't have an iPhone 10, so that really doesn't matter to me. New filters and stickers, that doesn't matter to me either. Multiplayer AR, don't really care. Group FaceTime, I might use that. Siri shortcuts, definitely will use that. New Siri voices, I'll probably mess around with that. New updates to the Stocks app, a new measure app. I use the Stocks app quite a bit, which I know sounds weird for someone my age, but I do like to check the stocks, and it's a great place to find all the news about the companies you're interested in and the stocks, etc. I'm in the new Measure app, and that's something I'm also interested in because I don't, you know, now that's just one less thing you need. You don't need a physical ruler anymore. Just use the Measure app. And I have an iPhone 8 as my main device, so it is compatible, which is great. So I'm definitely looking forward to that. As soon as the public beta comes out, which is going to be probably in a month or so, I'm going to download that to my iPod Touch 6th Gen because that's, I don't really use that anymore, so I don't really care if it's buggy. But I kind of want to experiment with iOS 12, so I think I might download the beta on my iPod Touch 6th Gen, and maybe I'll do a video on that. macOS Mojave, I don't use a Mac, but some amazing features like the dark mode, stacks, news, stocks, home, and voice memos are brought to the Mac. Group FaceTime as well. The new Mac App Store, which a lot of people were begging for. And some new developer frameworks and lots more. WatchOS 5, I don't have a watch. I'm an Apple Watch, but I kind of want one, and I think I might get it this year. I think I might finally cave in and buy one now that I have an iPhone 8. So activity competitions, auto workout detection, podcasts are coming to the Apple Watch. Yay. Personally, if I got the Apple Watch, I think I would be definitely listening to a lot of podcasts because I listen to probably about 10 hours of podcasts a week. So I would love it. You know, I just put in the AirPods, connect them up, listen to some podcasts. That sounds amazing. Updates to Siri, new wallpapers and stuff. Pretty cool. Excuse me, you might hear me sniffing and coughing. tvOS 12 will probably never get an Apple TV, so that doesn't really matter too much to me, but they add some 4K HDR support, new Arial screensavers, mobile TV app gets a lot of updates for like the mobile devices. That's pretty cool. Tesla energy storage projects, don't have much to say about that, except I'm very glad Tesla is stepping in and helping still hurricane-ravaged places like Puerto Rico, you know, that some people still don't have power. So this is great. Definitely good PR as well. It's just a good testing to see how these energy projects work for Tesla. So I think it's pretty good. Sterile neutrinos. So after I recorded that episode of This Week in Science, when I talked about sterile neutrinos, I did my homework and listened to a lot of podcasts about them, and I looked them up, and it's very controversial. A lot of people say it doesn't exist. Some people say it does, that for sure. Some people say no. Personally, I really don't know. I'm not a physicist or anything, so I'm not the best person to talk about this, but it's definitely pretty interesting. We have located a neutron star 200,000 light years from Earth. We talked about that 2 weeks ago. That's pretty cool, I think. It just really shows, first of all, just cool, obviously, but it really shows human innovation and how we're getting better, because just a few years ago, we couldn't locate a star that far away, and now we can, and it's pretty amazing that we're able to see things, or at least detect them, 200,000 light years away, which is just incomprehensible, because it takes light 200,000 years to get from there to here, which is just insane. It's an insane distance, seeing as light travels so insanely quick. But it's really cool. It shows that, you know, we are still innovating more than ever, obviously, and it's a pretty cool thing to think about. Life on Mars. So NASA's Curiosity, which is a Mars rover, found some curious things on Mars, which may lead to the conclusion of life there. They found carbon-based compounds that were aka organic molecules. We found methane, which shouldn't be there because it can only survive a few hundred years, so somehow it's replenishing it. And we found some organic compounds, like I said, and it's pretty interesting. Let's see here. I'm just reading through my notes for 2 weeks ago. So Mars, quote, Mars seasonally breathes this stuff, end quote. That's what the article said. So it, and by the stuff, it means methane, by the way. So something's happening on Mars. It's not just a desert, you know, lifeless planet. There could be some life, obviously not intelligent life, maybe some microorganisms, tiny things like that. That'd be awesome if there is. Again, this does not confirm life on Mars. It just contributes to the theory, or the, you know, the conclusion of life on Mars. We're not there yet, obviously. I think really the only time we'll be able to concretely find if there is life on Mars is when humans go to Mars. I think that's really going to be when we truly find out. So obviously don't get your hopes up for that, because that's still probably a decade or two away, according, and that's Elon Musk's estimates, and we all know how he tends to exaggerate times and, you know, tends to tell them to be quicker than they actually will be. So other people are saying 4 decades. I really don't know. Probably 3 decades, I'm guessing, 2 or 3, till we send humans to life on Mars. But then I think we'll be able to find, or at least confirm or bust this theory of life on Mars. Now, bees understand zero. Interesting, we talked about that. Humans couldn't understand the concept of zero for thousands of years. And bees might understand it. Pretty crazy, because we think of bees as pretty unintelligent. But in the insect world, they are like the geniuses of the insect world. Pretty interesting. I don't know. I believe that it's only humans, types of monkeys and apes, and maybe dolphins, and now bees that can understand zero. I'm not for sure on that. Don't quote me on that. But I think it's a very select group. I know that. So it's pretty insane what they did. I'm gonna tell you how they did it again. Just give you a refresher on this. So they had 2 panels. One with nothing in it, and one with a few shapes in it. The one with nothing in it was like the zero panel, right? And the one with shapes in it was the positive number panel. And they had 2 sets of bees. One set of bees were trained to be the greater than bees, or that they could understand. They were trained to understand the concept of greater than. And there were some bees that were supposed to, or that learned the concept of less than. So they put the less than bees in the positive number panel, and they put the greater than bees in the zero panel. And guess what? When the experiment started, the greater than bees flew to the positive number panel, because they knew that, hey, this panel has something in it. This is more than zero. And the fewer than, or the less than bees, flew from the positive number panel to the zero panel, because they understood that the zero panel was less than the positive number panel with shapes in it. It's pretty interesting. Again, this may show that bees exhibit zero processing capabilities. Again, this is not confirmed, but it's cool to think about. And a lot of people are, it's kind of controversial as well, but there's mounting evidence that it is true. And that's pretty interesting to me. A new type of gasoline that is made from carbon from the air. We talked about this 2 weeks ago. Again, this, I'm still on the podcast script from 2 weeks ago. I'm just kind of skimming through, giving my opinion on this. So this is from 2 weeks ago that this story emerged. Carbon Engineering, which is a Canadian company, is making fuel by sucking carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere and combining with hydrogen from water. And this makes cost-effective gasoline. It could help the earth. In a way, I guess, obviously, it seems kind of counterproductive to me, because if we're taking the carbon out of the air, right, and if our, so that's helping the, like, depollute the air, essentially, but if we're putting that in our cars, isn't that carbon just going to go straight back up into the air? So if it does, it seems very counterproductive to me, because essentially, it's the amount of CO2 in the air is going to stay static, because you're taking it out, but then you're putting it back in when you drive the vehicle. But nonetheless, it's something really cool. It says it could be a cost-effective way to take CO2 out of the atmosphere and help fight climate change. It's interesting subject, and it could help petrol car companies stay in business. So it is kind of interesting. Inexpensive carbon capture technology. We aren't on track to meet the goals of the Paris Accord. We were talking about this 2 weeks ago. Their carbon capture technology seemed like the best way to get carbon out of the air and depollute the air, essentially. But it was way too expensive, like as of $1,000 per ton. Previously, that's how much it would cost, or that was the estimate of how much it would cost to take carbon out of the air. But now, we could do it with this new technology. If this goes through and is developed, we could do it for just $94 to $232 per ton instead of $1,000 per ton. So this could help fight climate change once again. That's good. It's something that's very intriguing, definitely, for sure. The world's largest iceberg is melting. Now, we talked about this last week as well. We talked it's climate change is really affecting the atmosphere. Last week, I will talk about this more later in this episode. But as you know, last week we talked, or actually no, it was this week. We talked about how I'm on our podcast. How that Antarctica's ice was melting faster than ever thought. It's scary to think of how fast it's melting. It's scary, and we have to do something about it. It's going faster than previously thought, and it's going up exponentially. The rate of melting ice is going up and up and up exponentially. So it's not just going slow curve or anything. Or it's not staying static or going down. It's doubling, essentially, going up exponentially, which is very scary. So the world's largest iceberg was melting 2 weeks ago. Back in March 2000, an iceberg larger than Jamaica broke off Antarctica's Ross Ice Shelf. That's a tongue twister. It's been adrift at sea for the last 18 years, but now it's finally going into warmer waters, thus causing it to melt. Some people are sad about this. I mean, some chunk of ice. This actually doesn't have, it's not directly related to climate change. It was just thrown off course and brought into warmer tropical waters. So it's not necessarily climate change fault for this. But, I mean, a lot of ice is melting. And that, it must have raised the sea levels, obviously, an infinitesimal amount. Maybe like 0.0000001, maybe that's how much you raise the sea levels. I don't even know, but it was a huge iceberg. It was the world's largest iceberg, and it was larger than Jamaica, and it's finally starting to melt, and I think now it's almost completely gone, like an ice cube. You know, if you set an ice cube out in a hot summer day, it gradually melts. So that's kind of what's happening to this thing. But yeah, that's what we were talking about 2 weeks ago. So that's my opinion from the articles we talked about 2 weeks ago. Now let's talk about my opinions for last week. So, first of all, you can probably hear the construction. It's louder than ever, so I do apologize for that once again. But let's talk about my opinions for the things that were happening last week in the technological and scientific community. First thing, and probably the most important thing we have that we talked about last week, was the Tesla Roadster SpaceX package. I mean, you've probably all heard about this by now multiple times. So Elon tweeted that the SpaceX option package for the Tesla Roadster, the new Tesla Roadster, would have 10 small rocket thrusters arranged seamlessly around the car. He went on to say that they would use compressed air most likely, and that the trade-off for this would be that there would be no two back seats, which would probably be reserved for children. I mean, those seats are so small back there anyway. So they would take out the back seats in order to fit all the internals needed for those rocket thrusters. He also teased a long time ago that the vehicle may be able to fly short hops. That was a few months ago, way before he just tweeted this new revelation about the Tesla Roadster SpaceX option package. But it sounds really cool. From what I've heard, like from the videos and articles I've watched and just from reasoning, I'm guessing that this is going to be exorbitantly expensive, like insanely expensive. The base Tesla Roadster, when everything's said and done, is going to cost someone $250,000, a quarter of a million. The Founder series is going to cost $500,000. Now, some people are guessing that the Founder series is the Tesla SpaceX Roadster package, or the Tesla Roadster SpaceX package. Some people are saying that the Founder Series and the Tesla Roadster SpaceX package, they might be the same thing. I'm personally guessing not, and that this is going to be a whole other thing that you'll get to configure. I don't know. It could be the Founder Series. I really don't know. But I'm guessing the Tesla Roadster SpaceX package is going to cost at least $600,000 for the car when everything's said and done. But it could easily get to $750,000, you know, three quarters of a million. I really don't know. I'm not an expert in this, obviously. But it's insane and it's cool. So, and it's something interesting to think about. And he also said that these rocket boosters would decrease the 0 to 60 time. It would help, you know, with cornering and braking and all that, all those things. So pretty interesting. It seems like it's going to be a great car to drive. And Elon Musk said many times that he wants this to outdo the diesel cars in every single way imaginable. So it kind of takes away the halo effect of diesel or petrol cars. So this could definitely be the reason for offering the SpaceX Tesla SpaceX option package. But also, Tesla quietly released some improvements to the Model S and X. The S got the 70D Model X, which is now called the 75D, got a better 75 kilowatt battery, hence the new 75D name. The top speed of the X decreased to 130 miles per hour when it was 140 miles per hour, which is still impressive, but we don't know why there was that speed limit dip. Also, it comes with a $3,000 increase in price. The Model S got some more exciting improvements, I think. It got a new front, a new nose, essentially, that's supposed to look more like a Model 3 and potentially a Model Y nose. An air filtration system that was originally reserved for the Model X, new 48 amp hour charger, new headlights and some other improvements. The price stays static for the Model S, by the way, unlike the Model X. That's pretty interesting as well. I mean, it's great to see that Tesla is still doing something. You know, they're still paying attention to the Model S and X, although they're really focused on the Model 3s. So it's great to see, like I said, that they're still focused on these other cars. They're all beautiful cars, and this just makes them better. So pretty exciting in the world of Tesla, even though they kind of quietly released these things. Also, the Boring Company gets green light from Chicago to build their new loop system from O'Hare International Airport to downtown Chicago. It's insane. That's great. The Boring Company is definitely growing. Obviously, they have plans to build something in LA, and they're trying to get that finalized. And now the Chicago says, hey, you know, you can also build a loop system. They won the bid for the transportation bid. So now they get to build a loop system from O'Hare International Airport to downtown Chicago. And it's not going to use any public funds. Elon Musk did say in a press conference, which is probably reassuring for the people of Chicago and the taxpayers. So the max speed of this will be about 150 miles per hour. It sounds great. It's going to take just 12 minutes to get from the O'Hare International Airport to downtown Chicago or vice versa. So it's a really interesting. Of course, congratulations, Elon Musk and the Boring Company. This is a great step forward. It's really getting their name. And if this goes good, this really gives Elon Musk and the Boring Company some street cred, which will probably help them fuel their other projects as well. So that's amazing. I would love to go to Chicago and ride the loop system that they are making. They said they want to start Elon Musk said he wants to start construction in 3 to 4 months. And he says he wants the project to cost under $1 billion, and he wants to get it done in a few years. We also talked about some leaks, I guess you could call them, or some rumors about the Apple car. So we talked about some of the cool features it may have and stuff. It was pretty interesting, definitely. I mean, I really don't know what to say. An Apple car doesn't really make sense to me. I think Apple as some companies said, Apple's getting a little bit too big for their britches. They should stick with what they do best. Obviously, we should welcome innovation and we should welcome competitors because in the end, the consumer is the one who benefits from it. But I don't know. I mean, Apple has a history of having quite expensive products. So if it's anything like their iPhone 10, this is going to be exorbitantly expensive. But it's pretty interesting. I'm assuming it's probably going to be electric because Apple has all these, you know, they really tout this, you know, we're clean, we're environment friendly, all those things. So I'm sure it's going to be electric. So definitely pretty interesting. We'll keep you updated on that. So Opportunity, which is a Mars rover, it might have some problems because there's a Mars storm, a Mars dust storm, a Martian dust storm that is coming for Opportunity. And we talked about this on Monday. We talked about this on a podcast episode. But there are some new revelations. It's going good. Everything's nominal. Opportunity is fine. They're actually resuming some of the science experiments. If you didn't know, they only had the vitals running in order to conserve power because it's solar powered, and obviously the dust blocks a lot of sunlight, but they had to stop all of the science experiments and things they were doing because they wanted to keep Opportunity alive, so they only powered its vitals. But apparently things are getting better, and now they're resuming some of the science experiments, which is great. So I'm very glad the Opportunity is doing okay, and hopefully the dust storm will be out pretty soon. Antarctica's ice is melting extraordinarily fast. That's what we talked about for last week's This Week in Science. There's every year, 241 billion tons of ice is melting just from Antarctica, not even from the whole world. Imagine what the whole world is. It's probably like 300 billion tons for the whole world. But just in Antarctica, 241 billion tons a year are melting since 2012, which is pretty scary. We need to do something. This is further proof of climate change and its devastating effects. We have to do something to preserve this. And I'm not trying to inspire urgency because, while it is urgent, there are probably some other issues that are more urgent in this world, but it's something that I think should never leave the back of our minds, and it's something that we have to do something about globally, treaties, agreements, you know, etc. We have to do something because this is definitely just one example of the devastating effects of climate change. Also, a win for solar. That was the last article we talked about last week, and thus it's the last thing we talk about today on this episode of This Week in Science in Depth. So solar has just overthrown gas and wind as the biggest source of new U.S. power. That's awesome. As you probably know, I'm a big fan of solar. I'm a big supporter of renewable energy and solar in general. This is amazing. I think solar is probably the best source of renewable energy, just because I think it's probably much more reliable than something like wind or geothermal or hydroelectric. And I think solar is also the most widespread. And now, like I said, solar has just overthrown gas and wind as the biggest source of new U.S. power. Obviously, there are things like fossil fuels and stuff that are nuclear that are still ahead of solar. But solar is climbing up the ranks, and hopefully, and just, you know, a little bit, we might see solar overtake every other source, or renewable energy take over coal, fossil fuels, etc. Because that is the day when we really start to slow climate change, when solar starts climbing the ranks, passing things like gas and nuclear, or natural fossil fuels. That's when it's really a big, big day for preventing climate change. Obviously, it's not like one day magically climate change stops. No, every gradual improvement in solar, and every time solar, you know, every time one more person installs solar or one more corporation uses solar, every time that happens, it's a very gradual increase. But so it's not like just magically one day it's going to be great, but every time, you know, solar becomes just a bit more popular, or renewable energy becomes a bit more popular, that is definitely a win, and it's something that will hopefully at least start to slow down climate change. This year, we're going to do We're going to do 10.8 gigawatts of installation in the U.S. for solar. And by 2023, annual installations will be about 14 gigawatts. Like I said, that's great. I hope solar starts to surpass some other worse energy sources like coal and fossil fuels. And I hope one day I'll I hope I'll live to see the day when solar and renewable energy sources are king and they're the top. Because, like I said, when they're the top, that is when we're going to see some major improvements. Major decreases in the amount of CO2 we are emitting. But every time one more person uses solar or any renewable energy, it's a win. It's a very gradual increase, but it's one that's slowly and steadily increasing, and it's happening, and it's great. So, like I said, I will keep you updated on that. But that is all for today. I've talked about my opinions for the last 2 weeks of articles. I will see you next time for This Week in Science, actually this Friday. So tomorrow I'll see you again, but I'll see you for This Week in Science in depth in 2 weeks, because like I said, it's a bi-weekly series. But check me out on Twitter at @TWISciPodcast, or email me at TWISciPodcast@gmail.com. If you have any questions, concerns, or you have any comments, email me or tweet me there. Anyway, thank you so much for watching. Like I said, I'll see you in 2 weeks for another episode of This Week in Science in Depth. And I'll see you tomorrow for a regular episode of This Week in Science. Goodbye.